Quaker.com podcast. Today is, I don't know, it's hard to tell when we're going to air this. We're actually recording it. What is today?
Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday. So we're recording it on the...
Thanksgiving Eve.
On the 21st of November, but we'll probably be sending this out either Thursday or Friday, probably Friday.
Yeah.
So anyway, so with me in the studio, I'm Ben. And with me in the studio is Kai, my sometime co-host, all the time daughter. And like we always say, we're the only father-daughter anarchist podcasting team in the known universe.
That we know of.
So I suppose we have to start front and center with the big event. You're coming across Ohio, eastern Ohio, in Appalachian, Ohio.
Yes.
And... And some drunken deer stumbles out onto the freeway, right?
Yeah. I was driving along 35, and there was...
That's awfully slow.
Highway 35.
Oh, okay.
I was going about 60, because the speed limit was 60, and I'm a responsible citizen. And I was driving along and everything was fine, and then all of a sudden there was a deer, and there was pretty much no time to stop or do anything, or there was just, oh look, I'm gonna hit a deer now.
And you kept your head and didn't swerve.
No, I did not swerve. I don't actually know that I had time to swerve, even if I had been so inclined. There was just, you know, I'm not sure that I had time to really even break. Like, it was just deer.
Wham.
Yeah. And I think it's very funny because I guess the brakes in my Jeep are really good or something, because there were no skid marks on the ground or anything like that. There was just a sudden puddle of where all the fluids from my vehicle were and bits of the front end of my vehicle.
Well, you have the, you know, these advanced brakes that they have on the newer vehicles, anti-locking brakes and everything. They allow a vehicle, even when you stomp on the brakes really hard, when tires just lock and they start to skid and slide, the rubber actually becomes fluid right where it's touching the ground. And it actually becomes a lubricant.
Right.
And so you can brake a lot faster, you know, in less distance, that is, by not locking up your tires.
Right.
People, there are a lot of things that bikers know like this by nature that is slowly dawning on the general public that bikers have known for a long time.
Right.
So, and I've heard it argued, like I've heard the old-time genius bikers who really think they know everything will tell you, well, if it gets bad enough, you lay your bike down on its side. And the problem there is that when you do that, you risk having the bike catch and flip up into the air and kill you.
Right.
The other thing is you get a lot more traction by a controlled, using the tires to control your stop than you do laying it down where you now have, you know, chrome sliding on pavement.
Right.
Because now there's almost no friction at all.
Right.
And, you know, so that was an old legend the bikers would tell. And usually the bikers who told that story didn't have a lot of experience, you know, braking hard and actual things. So that's totally off the topic, but I get there's little pet peeves like that is, you know, I've got like 750,000 miles on a motorcycle, and I hear people say things like that sometimes, like, you know, oh, well, in an emergency, you just lay your bike down and, you know, or you lock it up. But a person, and Oftentimes the person saying that actually had experience wrecking a bike.
Right.
But that's the deal. I've ridden 750,000 miles and never put a street bike down.
Right.
I've never had not once did I ever go all the way down on a street bike. I have been in situations where observers thought for certain that it was going to be, a complete outright wreck, and caught it and corrected it and brought it to a halt. But so anyway, that's my biker brag. So anyway, that was totally off the deer subject.
Right.
Although my brother one time was on his Harley, and it was here in Ohio, and he was riding with a group of friends, and he was the lead bike in the group, and a deer popped out of nowhere, and he sort of put the bike sideways a little bit intentionally, mm-hmm. but he's really, really talented. And as he put the bike sideways, the deer leapt over him,
right.
And the deer's feet just kind of like, if he would have had hair, he's totally bald, but if he would have had hair, it just would have ruffled his hair with the deer's hooves as the deer leapt over his bike. And all the other bikers behind my brother in line were just aghast that he was able to react that quick, lay the bike down, slide underneath the deer, and then pop the bike back up again. So anyway, that's a distraction to the story. So you're going down Highway 35, Eastern Ohio, middle of the night.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a deer materializes right in front of your bumper.
Pretty much. I mean, there was no, I didn't see it come in from the side. I didn't see it. I just saw sudden right there in front of me deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I braked as hard as I could. And I really, I don't remember a whole lot of it. I remember that there was a very loud, crunchy, poppy noise. And then I remember getting out of the vehicle as fast as I could because there were weird smells and weird things and smoke and steam. And I was just like, I want to not be in this vehicle. On the off chance that something explodes, I don't want to be in it.
So, and in the end, what it ended up doing was driving the radiator back into the engine, completely destroying the grill, pushing the fender back into one of the doors, destroying the windshield.
Oh, yeah. The deer itself didn't come up and hit the windshield, but the airbags deploying did. And so it broke the windshield, and it's a nasty wreck. I mean, it's a mess. I really hope that they fix it and don't just total the car because, I mean, it's a brand new car. It's a 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I had swerved in the slightest bit, I probably would have rolled it.
You know,
it's a Jeep Patriot. They're so top heavy. Mm-hmm. Any of those kinds of SUVs like that, the slightest little bit of anything and they roll.
Yeah. And so, you and your passenger both survived with relatively little damage.
Yeah,
sore hands and arms.
We're a little bit bruised and battered and beat up a little bit, but all told, we were both wearing our seatbelts, the safety bags or the airbags deployed, and I've got a pretty nasty bruise on my arm from the airbag, but it would have been a much nastier bruise like if it had been my face against the steering wheel.
Now the statist will make the argument right here that you see government saved you because if it weren't for government you wouldn't have seat belts or airbags or you wouldn't have crumple zones on your fenders and you wouldn't have all these other things and you wouldn't have had the kind of windshield, what's it called, the tempered glass windshield with multi-layers so that it
it doesn't
break off in giant knives of glass driving towards your face.
But it's a faulty argument because, the market will fix anything. And if roads had an open market on them, there's a very good chance that we wouldn't have roads that were open to deer.
Yeah, and even the deer population itself, there's a huge deer population in Ohio.
Yes.
And that's managed, there's, imagine quotes around that word, it's managed by the state of Ohio.
But the problem is, the reason that the deer population is out of control is because there are no predators.
Right.
And there are no predators because the state has systematically exterminated all large predators through, you know, overhunting and giving out programs so that people slaughter needlessly predators, mm-hmm. you know. So there are multiple reasons why, mm. and anything that the state does, there are negative consequences to it. Even if there are also some positive consequences, mm-hmm. those are in spite of.
Yeah.
Not because of.
For instance, with the deer population, you know, we have a mutual friend, Eddie Free, mm-hmm. and he is heads an organization called, what is it called? The Agorist?
The Benevolent Order of Agorist Hunters? Is
yeah,
that the one?
Yeah. I'm glad somebody around here has a decent memory. Anyway, and Eddie has talked, I've talked to Eddie about this. If true property ownership took place in our society, mm-hmm. rather than a socialist system, because you know, the system of what's called, you know, animal management or game management or whatever, that is all a socialist system,
right?
And if you had true ownership in these kind of things, rather than having everything in the commons,
right.
which is what we have now,
right?
If you had true ownership, then people could manage deer populations, having the motivation of, you know, all the deer within this geographical area that I own are my deer.
Right.
Which used to be the case. You know, that's what one of the main aspects of the Magna Carta was, over deer hunting.
Right.
That was the very thing that they went and stormed through the king's protection, the lords, the different landowners in England stormed into the king's castle and demanded that he sign the Magna Carta over property ownership.
Right.
That was one of the main things. And deer management was one of the main things.
Right.
Because they made the argument that the king made the argument that basically all game belonged to the king.
Right.
And the landowners were like, no.
Right.
That's just not the case.
Right.
Because England didn't have the same level of worship for the for the king that other countries had. They didn't
right.
see the king as having divine rights at that time,
right.
that point in time. He was just one of the landowners who happened to be, you know, of a hereditary and so forth that,
right.
that put him in a higher position. But he wasn't necessarily chosen by God. They throw him out and make another one any day they wanted.
Right.
So so that's one of the main reasons that the Magna Carta was even signed, was to have true property ownership in game.
Right.
And we've thrown that out completely in the U.S. That is, you know, from, about Teddy Roosevelt days is
yeah.
when it all switched over and became socialist. And game management, or whatever they want to call it, you know, took over the market and destroyed the free market in animal ownership.
Yep.
And so, yeah, so we have a huge deer population, and deer hunters like that.
Right.
Because,
well, and they hold that up and they say, you know, hunting and management hunting, you know, the way that game wardens do it creates an explosion in deer population. And this is true. It does. But it also creates problems that you can't necessarily expect, because mm-hmm. you can't centrally plan things.
Right.
You know, centrally planning things fails.
And the statists will make the argument, well, you know, if it wasn't for the government, then the hunters would just go out and just hunt all the deer in one season. There wouldn't be any more. The problem is, you're, again, assuming a socialist, an in-the-commons situation,
right.
a socialist, you're begging the question. That's what you're doing. That's what that's called. You're creating a scenario that's already in your favor and then getting the results you want from
right.
it. But if you had actual ownership, like, you know, there's no population problem with chickens.
Right.
We don't have there's no scarcity of pigs or cattle.
Right.
And the reason why is because you have ownership of those.
Right.
Well, if you had ownership of, you know, what was that kind of pigeon that went extinct? You know what I'm talking about? It doesn't matter.
No.
Anyway, if there was true ownership in any particular thing, you know, mm-hmm. like deer or like anything else, elk or anything, then you wouldn't ever have a population crash because the people who own that particular geographic area would manage their own, mm-hmm. or they would not manage them and they wouldn't have any.
Right.
And then all of a sudden there's a market for somebody else to have more.
Right.
So, you know, there would be a motivation there for them to breed more or to have a property where more could be bred and then sell them to the people who don't have them.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that, you know, people think that hunters would go out and just hunt and devastate the population, but that comes from the idea that deer is incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason deer is incredibly valuable is because you're only allowed so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
If there were an open market, then there wouldn't be this whole scarcity and then, gluts and
shortages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because socialism in any level distorts the price mechanism. And that's what we're talking about. The price is not necessarily dollars.
Right.
But the price is what you're willing to do or give up to get whatever the product is.
Right.
And so when you have a socialist organization that controls something, you've immediately destroyed the price mechanism. And so you can't tell what people will really want, you know, what they would be willing to give up to get that item.
Right.
And with the situation as it is, since deer are all held in common held in common under the current socialist system, then you don't really know what the value of a deer is.
Right.
You know, would the value of a deer be similar to the value of a cow?
Right.
Well, quite possibly.
Right.
You know, a lot of people think the meat is slightly better. They don't produce the kind of bulk that that cattle produce. You can't necessarily milk deer. But, I don't know why you couldn't other than, you know.
I don't know why you couldn't, but I just, I don't
well, goat's
think I
milk
would.
Is good.
This is true. Goat's milk is good.
Yeah.
Maybe deer milk is good.
Who knows?
Well, you know, I think, don't Northern European people, don't they do reindeer?
Yeah.
They milk Laps, reindeer.
Yeah, the people of Lapland.
And reindeer are just kind of like big deer.
I think they're more like elk. I could be wrong on that.
Maybe, I don't know.
But I think elk are the North American version of reindeer, if I recall. But I could be wrong on that. I'm not a deer expert. We have to ask Eddie Free that one.
See, if we were all cool like the Freedom Fiends, we could be all like, you know, call in on Skype and tell us, but we do this non-live because we mess up too much.
Yeah. So, government's bad,
okay? Government's bad, okay? Now I'm just thinking like, just continuing to think about that, like, could you milk a moose? Would a moose let you milk it?
Well, if you could convince a moose to allow you to milk it, I'm sure its milk would be extremely high in fat.
Moose are pretty dumb. They might not notice.
Well, yeah, that one famous one had a squirrel telling him what to do.
Right? Hey, that was a flying squirrel, and they're super intelligent.
If you had a flying squirrel that could talk,
I would do anything it told me to do.
You really should listen to it.
That's just okay. Fair play, you win.
I'm with the squirrel.
Plus, it wore that really cool hat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was in the CIA.
Well, yeah.
Spy.
They both were.
Okay, well, we're running out of our topic, so we better break for a commercial here. Would you like to do something to support BadQuaker.com? Here's how easy it is. If you're already going to buy something from Amazon, go to badquaker.com first. Click on any of the buttons for Amazon. Once at Amazon, shop like you normally would. You'll pay the same price for the things you buy from Amazon, but Amazon will give badquaker.com a tiny portion of that purchase. It's amazingly easy to shop at Amazon, it won't cost you any extra, and you'll be supporting badquaker.com. Thank you. Okay, now in the first part there, we talked about anarchy and the deer population.
Right.
But we only slightly touched on roads.
Right.
But we were talking before we had the microphones, we were talking about how there really wouldn't be any deer strikes at all if people owned the highways. You would have a motivation to build the highways in such a way that they would be attractive to your customers.
Right.
And one of the things you don't want your customers doing is having deer jump in front of their car all the time.
Right.
If you're the state, you don't care.
Right.
You just force people to buy insurance, and, you know, the problem is solved to
right.
the state. They don't
right.
really care that there's 40, 50,000 people getting killed every single year in just in the United States on highways alone.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
You know, they'll just pass another law and push it off on some car manufacturer to force them to do something that may or may not be the best thing that the market could come up with.
Right. Well, and that's exactly the issue, is that we, you know, we have all of these safety features in a car, but the problem, the heart of the actual problem, is that you as a human being are taking a, you know, several thousand pound mm-hmm. chunk of steel and fiberglass and mm-hmm. glass and barreling it down the road at 60 to 85 miles an hour on a completely open road.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the heart of the problem.
And specifically with freeways, you're driving a car that is the product of layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Up until now, till 2012. And you're driving that car on a highway that was designed in Nazi Germany in 1936.
Right.
It was with very little design change since 1936.
Right.
Because once the government socializes the roads, there's no motivation to change. There's no secondary market. There's no competition.
Right. There's no competition. And so there's no getting better.
Yeah. No incentive there to get better. It's easier for the government to just point the, you know, their regulations at industry
yep.
and say, change the car.
Yeah.
Well, who knows if there were, you know, if free enterprise were allowed with, you know, free market were allowed with with roads, you know, rather than in the 1920s, the government socializing the roads, I guess is
right.
what I'm trying to say, if they had just remained as a free market in roads, then who knows how highways would have, you know,
well,
evolved.
And here's the thing. Highways may not even exist, because the idea of a highway is really inefficient at this point in time. We have airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have airplanes.
Yeah. Well, but the airplanes...
We can get from one section of the country to the other section of the country in a couple of hours. The idea that we are still getting in a wagon, and even if the wagon doesn't have a horse anymore, it has an engine. Okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a wagon. You're getting in a wagon, and you're rolling across the ground. We have airplanes. Why are we continuing to do this?
That's an interesting thought, because basically... It's other than its mode of propulsion.
Right.
It's basically technology from, you know, from the Middle Stone Age.
Yeah.
A very interesting thought. Other than its means of propulsion.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, okay, so we've moved from you dragging it
mm-hmm.
to your donkey dragging it, to your horse dragging it, and now you have a combustion engine that's dragging it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's still just a wagon.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I've talked before on the podcast about how easy it would be to have personalized sized, basically Zeppelins,
mm-hmm.
rigid frame airships.
Mm-hmm.
You could have one that would fit in your garage that would easily be able to lift, you know, what a car would
right.
carry, like
right.
two people and a couple hundred pounds of groceries,
right.
which is what most people need a car for.
Right.
And you could have a rigid airship that would fit in your garage that would do exactly that.
Right.
And if you, you know, you would have a tendency to want to stay at lower elevations.
Right.
But you would have a tendency to want to be high enough to, you know, not hit people's houses and trees
right, and
things.
Trees and stuff.
So you would have just literally open skies from about 100 feet up or so. Like with hot air balloons.
Right.
Where we are here in Ohio, we're between two airports that are very popular with hot air balloons. So pretty much any time when weather is good, there's just a constant string of hot air balloons flying over or around our neighborhood.
Right.
And the odd thing, I have never, ever heard Now, there are hot air balloon races where you get a lot of them together all in one spot, mm-hmm. and they end up kind of bumping into each other and stuff. Right. But under open conditions where they're not all taking off at the same time in a race formation, mm-hmm. I've never heard of a hot air balloon ramming into another hot air balloon. or have
Do you
ever...
Do you think he's using the same wind we are using?
Have you ever heard of a hot air balloon having a deer impact?
No.
Or even a goose?
No.
I mean, the goose is like flying along, sees the hot air balloon, and it's like, I'm not ramming into that.
That's pretty sad that I think goose are more... I don't know. With planes, you get rammed. You hit goose every now and again.
Yeah, but they're flying at super fast speeds.
Right.
You know? And here's the other thing about speed. If you really think about it, why do we have to go so fast?
Right.
Before the state really got a hold of things in the 1800s, because the state really came to its maturity about 1900.
Right.
And about the same time, there became this fascination for speed, and it was all based on the internal combustion engine.
Right.
But prior to that time, you know, there was a little bit of fascination with speed with railroads.
Right.
But it didn't really grip the public.
Right.
You know? But around the same time that this marriage between government and industry, about the same time this fascism took place, and corporations really came into their fullness in the 20th century, prior to that time, people set a much calmer pace. There
Right.
was no reason to get from point A to point B with any kind of urgency.
Right.
You know? So I can't help but to believe that if there were no state, then life in general would be setting a slower pace, and there would be no reason. If you have to get to, you know, if you're in New York and you have to get to Los Angeles, what's the big deal if it takes 2 weeks?
Right.
You know, as a matter of fact, maybe you can, if you had your own airship to go that far, which would be, you know, efficiency-wise, a Zeppelin or any type of a rigid airframe like that, mm-hmm. a balloon is very efficient because
right.
mostly it uses air currents.
Right.
And even the powering of, you know, they do have engines.
Right.
But even that is much more efficient, a way to move weight
right.
than rolling it across the ground.
Right.
You have a lot more friction rolling it on the ground than
right.
you do pulling it through the air.
And the thing is, like, sitting here talking about how the free market, it's the reason that you can't centrally plan. Because we can sit here and say, well, this is how the free market could do it, or that's how the free market could do it. But at the end of the day, we are people in 1950 discussing what computers are going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Nobody has any idea. Even the leading people at the forefront of the movement of computers in the early 1980s had no idea where the computers were going.
Yeah.
You know, they had this, well, people can keep recipes on it, you know?
Yeah, recipes in your checkbook. That
yeah.
was the big selling points early on for personal computers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you can't even, you have a computer that fits in the palm of your hand and can make phone calls and can get on the internet. And nobody thought of that.
Yeah.
It just happened.
You have a computer in your pocket that can tell you where the nearest Indian restaurant is, or you can order Chinese and have it delivered to where you're at. But if you decide to go to the Indian restaurant, it'll give you directions on how to get there.
Right.
That's amazing.
It is.
If you think about that, even 1980, 1990, who would have thought of this?
Yeah.
But that's what the free market does. It drives innovation in different directions.
Yep.
That sometimes that's a weakness when you're talking to a statist, because they don't realize that aspect of the market.
Right.
That the market is the imagination of billions of people.
Right.
And so there's no possible way that one or two or 10 or 50 people can get together and you know, brainstorm and come up with an idea that, you know, that you can't compare that with
right.
with the market, which is billions of people all coming up with sometimes crazy harebrained ideas,
right.
but sometimes just pure genius.
Right.
But the fact is, you know, a small committee, even if we're sitting around trying to decide how there can be anarchy, basically you're still central planning.
Right.
And so there's no possible way a little committee like that can come up with a solution that can compare in any way to the billions of possibilities that the market has at its disposal.
And I think once you truly understand that, it almost sort of makes it religious, because somebody will be like, well, how would this happen? And the only true answer that you can give, the only honest answer that you can give is the free market will do it.
Yeah, faith. It is faith.
And it's complete faith. And it's faith based on logic, and it's faith based on actual things that happen, and you can say, and this is why, and here are examples, and you can use the scientific method, and it's science, but it's also faith.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't sit here and describe to you how the open market would do it, because any way that I tell you that the open market could do it is centrally planning, and that's not the way that the open market would do it.
And of course, we're not talking about using force in central planning. That would be the state. But the idea that a single individual or a small group of individuals can come up with any kind of definitive answer,
right? It's not logical. And you know, you can see this even to the point where, okay, so you have a farmer, and he has an acre of land, and he very carefully, with the latest scientific ways, he grows as much food on that land as he possibly can. Well, an acre of rainforest in the middle of Brazil that has been completely untouched by humans grows more food.
Yeah, if you actually do a calorie count of what is available there and what's being produced, and you know, just in the wild, the total wildness produces a higher caloric per acre,
right? And it's not because human beings are bad,
right?
It's because there is an open market there.
Yeah,
and people don't see nature as an open market, but it is.
Yeah.
If there are resources available for one thing, that thing will thrive. And if there are not, then it won't. And if squirrels like one particular nut, then they will have more trees of that.
Yeah, you know, it's plant.
Yeah, it's a cycle, and it is an open market system.
And the farmer will have a tendency to want to kill the, you know, bad bugs.
Right.
Whereas the forest has a balance.
Right.
And so you have all kind, and every one of those bugs is high in calories.
Right.
You know, they're yummy, yummy bugs.
Yep.
So yeah, you anarchy always, net wise, produces more than does a centrally planned market.
And that's not to say that, you know, again, I don't want to say like, oh, human beings are bad.
No, it's not a good or bad judgment. It's which produces more.
It is the fact that the more that you move towards an open market, the more you produce and the more abundance there is. Mm-hmm. And the less.
Here's an example of how central planning is stupid. Your mom and I went to lunch yesterday. Mm-hmm. We went to one of the standard, medium grade. It's not necessarily fast food, but it's a sit down restaurant.
Right.
Well, Chili's. Okay. We're naming names here.
So we and don't you have somebody to thank for that?
Yes. I have both you, Kai, and Kelly, our friend at Survival Gear Bags.
Yeah. Well, it was mostly him. Yeah. He had contacted me and asked me what was in the area, but he was the one who thought that up.
And Kelly was kind enough to send us a gift certificate, and we enjoyed a really nice lunch at Chili's. I have to say, they really surprised me. The thing that I ordered, I can't remember what it was, but it was some kind of a chicken thingy with stuff on it, you know. But it was really good. It really surprised me with the, you know, because you think of that level of restaurant, it's better than like McDonald's or something like that. But it's still a chain restaurant. Mm-hmm. But it really surprised me how good that was. But here's my point. Now, okay, so Chili's, like other restaurants like that, are a corporation.
Right.
And that means that a committee of people make the decisions.
Right.
And they pass it around from you know, manager level and bosses of different kinds. And so these decisions are made. and it's always a top down dictating to the people below, mm-hmm. you're going to do this, you're going to use these phrases, mm-hmm. you're going to wear this kind of clothes, you're going to, you know,
right.
all that stuff is decided in committee. So we get there, and your mom ordered a glass of wine, and mm-hmm. I ordered a beer. Okay, so the waitress goes, and she does this different stuff, and she comes back to our table with a glass of wine and a beer and two straws. Now, who in the world? I mean, honestly, other than somebody that's got a broken jaw or
right,
some medical reason,
right.
who in the world
drinks a glass of wine or a beer with a straw?
Yeah. Yeah, why would you do that? And if the tiny portion of the public, you know, there probably is somebody somewhere.
Some germaphobe that doesn't want to touch the glass or
possibly,
something.
Possibly, yeah. Somebody somewhere could theoretically want a straw with their beer. That being the case,
they are wrong and should be shunned from the community.
No, but that being the case, how difficult
they
is it for that one person to ask for a straw? I mean, they're a weirdo anyway.
Right.
Ask for a straw.
Right.
But because it's a top-down decision from someone in the corporation.
Any drink you bring
yeah,
a straw.
Yeah, because I'm sure there was some concern that sodas were brought to the, or pop, as they say. Sodas.
That was very, we went to lunch yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and the lady came out and she was like, "Do you need another pop?" And it was just very weird because I had spent so long in not pop areas. And I was just like, oh, that's right. You say that. Why?
But yeah, I'm sure at some point in the corporate...
I'm going to have the pop speakers mad at me.
At some point, it was a corporate discussion.
Right.
That, you know, some mystery diner somewhere, some, you know, how they have these random people
yeah.
working for the company that go in and have lunch at a place and check it out and see how it does. I'm sure somebody did that, and they didn't get a straw with their soda that they ordered, and so they put that on the little, you know, tattletale
right.
form that they had to fill out to get their free lunch.
Right.
And it went back to this corporate, and some corporate bigwig put his fist down on his desk and said, "From now on, we will serve one straw with every drink, no matter what."
Right.
And because that moron made that edict, now I had to get, and it doesn't hurt me to get a straw with my beer.
But it's wasteful.
It's stupid. Yeah, it's wasteful.
And it's wasteful. And the thing is, like, you think, oh, well, it doesn't matter to me if they're wasteful or not. But it does matter to you.
Yeah, you pay for it.
Because you pay for it.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's a straw. Now we take that, and that's what central planning does with a restaurant.
Right.
You have layers and layers and layers of that kind of thing going on all through corporations.
Oh, yeah.
And since almost everything in modern society runs on corporations.
And that doesn't even begin to touch where all of the stupid bureaucratic laws that force them
yeah.
to have waste.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the idea that you have to throw away every bit of food that is not used within
yeah.
a certain amount of time, even
rather
if
than,
it's good or not.
Rather than give it to a charity or,
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah. So that, you know, that's the result of central planning. That's what you
yeah.
get, whether it's on a corporate level or government level. The difference between corporate level and government level is, at least with a corporate level, there is still an incentive to satisfy the customer.
Yeah.
You know, because they'll leave the Chili's and go to Arby's or whatever.
Right.
Not Arby's, Applebee's.
Right.
But, okay, so the timer has hit and we have to take a break. We'll be right back. Did you know author Taryn P. Lupo has a new novel out called One Nation Under Blood? When a rejuvenative blood technology is developed that pits the young against the old, the government must take firm steps to address the war of supply and demand brewing across generational lines. Blood is not the only thing bought and sold in this dystopian tale of technology, economics, and independence. Vampires are now very real, but we never expected them to wear our grandmother's best Sunday dress. BadQuaker.com uses HostGator as our web hosting service. It was fast and easy to get set up, and the support we receive is top-notch. They have helpful and friendly 24/7, 365 live technical support and a 99.9% uptime guarantee, and they have some of the best prices in the business. If you have a website, or if you want to have a website, check them out by going to badquaker.com and click on the button for HostGator. And thank you very much for supporting badquaker.com. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the commercial break. And we were ranting about central planning.
Central planning. Central planning's bad, okay? You shouldn't central plan.
You already used that joke.
I did, but not on the air. And they haven't heard it, so it's new to them.
Are you sure? I think that was in the first section.
No, it was during the break.
Oh, okay. We have.
You can't remember anything, old man.
We have talked over and over about doing a behind-the-scenes or outtake thing.
Something. Although, you know, I really feel bad because some of the best material that we have is like 11 o'clock at night around the kitchen table.
Yeah.
And
with more discipline, you know, we should just have the old, that old mic
just,
and just turn
just
it
have
on. And
Adam, we should have the people who do Adam Kokesh's stuff just come around and follow us around all the time.
Well, if we had a budget.
We're awesomer than Adam Kokesh.
If we had a budget like Adam works with, and okay, I'm not going to rant in that direction. Zip my lips right now.
Pod beef.
No, Adam has his niche, and he you know, he does what he does, and he has the audience that he has, and I'm very glad he has the success that he has. I just can't stand to listen to him.
Well, you know, people's personalities are the world is made up of a rainbow of people, and if we were all the same, it would be boring.
Well, and actually, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about, because there currently is a free market in podcasting.
Yes.
So you get every kind of flavor that you could possibly think of, and
yes,
and it's all
and
out
it's
there.
And it's good.
It's good that there is that kind of a variety, because there are people who listen to who would listen to me and say, this is horrible, I don't want
right.
to hear this.
Right.
And who listen to Adam and go like, yeah, that's, man, that just clicks for me.
Right.
And this is the way with like Alex Jones. Some people, and we have a little bit of a crossover audience with him.
Right.
Some people can listen to him and really either be entertained
right.
or informed, because he talks.
Pick out useful bits.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, I just want to slap the guy, you know? I understand how important it is that he does what he does. I just can't stand listening to him.
Right.
I want to reach over and slap him.
Right.
But that's better than, and I try to be non-aggressive, so
right.
therefore I don't listen to him.
Right.
But that would be different from, say, somebody like, what's his name, that conservative, that neocon radio.
Oh, Rush Limbaugh?
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh. He doesn't make me, I don't want to slap Rush Limbaugh. He doesn't give me that tendency.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to punch him in the nose. So I don't listen to him either. Because then the cops show up, and
there's
paperwork.
I hate paperwork.
And then,
you know, I have to say, we had two cops come out
with the deer incident. Yeah,
with the great 2012 deer incident. And the first one was very Andy, and the second one was very Barney, and it was very amusing to me. And the second one stole my pocket knife. Stupid cop.
So you had this whole terrorist plan plotted out. First, I'm going to stage the killing of a deer on the highway.
No. It was the CIA.
They just wanted to put tracking devices on your Jeep?
The CIA trapped a deer and they let it loose in front of my Jeep. And I had talked to the rental car people, and they said that there had been like five other people that night in that same little stretch that had gotten hit by a car. And so I'm thinking it was like a Bonnie and Clyde thing where they kept releasing deer and getting the wrong vehicle and just being like, push it off to the side of the road till they got me. And so they got me, and now they're going to take my Jeep into some repair place, and they're going to install all manner of listening devices in it. I'm sure this is what's going to happen. But it's okay, because I'm going to get it back, and I'm going to line the interior with tin foil. I don't know where I'm going to find tin foil, but I'm going to buy some tin foil.
That being the difference of what is actually aluminum foil,
right.
not tin.
Right.
Because tin is one thing and aluminum is something else.
Right, they're two different metals.
And you made another reference in there that might get past people, was the Bonnie and Clyde reference.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people
don't realize that
they just basically set up an ambush, and when a car was coming down the road, they just opened fire on it, assuming it was Bonnie and Clyde, and it turned out to be a local school teacher that they murdered.
Yeah, well,
and so they drag her off to the side, and they came up with a slightly better idea. We'll have a truck that's pretend like it's broke down, and we'll see if we can get them to pull over and identify them before we murder them.
Right.
And so that's what they ended up, you know, after they had failed and murdered a completely innocent person that was just driving down the road.
Right.
It's funny because, you know, you hear people looking around today's society and they see the TSA and they see Homeland Security and they see Border Patrol just acting like complete Nazis.
And they get this idea, oh, I wish times were back in a better time when we had more rights. We never had more rights.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking 1930s. We have a couple of people who are accused of robbing banks.
Right.
And so they literally just set up an ambush and just fired on a car that's coming down the road without even really identifying. It only had one person in it instead
right.
of two.
Right.
And without properly identifying the people in the car or without a trial, without any kind of thing like that.
Yep.
Federal agents just murdered them.
Yep.
And that was in the 1930s. They did the same thing to
John Dillinger.
Dillinger, yeah. He's walking down the street.
Either, coming out of a movie theater.
I can't remember if he was going to or coming from a theater. But
I think he was coming out of a movie theater.
And they switched the story around and say, well, he drew his pistol. Well, why would he?
Right.
He had been captured in, before, and
yeah.
he could get out of being, you know, he
yeah.
could get out of situations like that. Drawing your gun when you're surrounded by federal agents, John Dillinger just wasn't that stupid.
Right.
That's suicide.
Right.
Now, once they already were firing on him, hitting him with bullets,
right.
then I'm sure he was trying to get his gun out as he's right. falling to the ground bleeding to death.
Right.
But that's basically what they did. They just figured out where he was going to be. They had an informant that they double-crossed, by the way.
Yeah.
And just murdered him.
Yeah.
You know? And that was in the 1930s. This is not a new thing.
No.
What Obama is doing right now with just picking out people and having them murdered overseas was not
or,
that unusual.
Or here.
Yeah. It wasn't that unusual for J. Edgar Hoover to do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you think about it. There's on LouRockwell.com, there's been a lot of stuff lately on Kennedy, on the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And people might say, well, that's just a bunch of crazy conspiracy. Why would the FBI get involved in something like that? Well, actually, you know, 20 years earlier, maybe they weren't killing presidents 20 years earlier, but the FBI whacked people all the time, you know.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of what they do. It's
yeah.
kind of what they were formed to do.
Yeah. So the idea that they might get so bold as to kill a president, well, why not? You know, or the CIA, why not? They had been
yeah.
trying to kill Castro, and that's open in you know in the public.
Right.
The Operation Northwoods. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
It was presented to Kennedy actually. That they could.
Oh, I think you were. I think we talked about this on a podcast.
Yeah.
Once.
They presented it to Kennedy that they could stage terrorist events in the U.S. and actually kill Americans
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. and make it look like Cubans were doing it and use that as an excuse to attack Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And Kennedy's like, "No, we're not going to be doing that." Well, you know, if they would seriously take that to the president, expecting him to buy on to that idea.
Right.
They wouldn't have just wasted their time. They had some expectation that he would go with them on that.
Right.
So, you know, if they would do that, and we know that that's true.
Right.
Because of Freedom of Information Act
right.
has revealed that stuff. So if we know that they would do that, ask the president to do that, well, then what wouldn't they do?
Right.
You know, and that doesn't verify every crazy conspiracy theory that's out there. There are some really loony conspiracy theories.
Well, and like, you know, like we say all the time with regards to conspiracy theories, I am not going to believe a conspiracy theory just because it's plausible.
Right.
You know, if you come up to me and you say, look, these are the facts, this is what they're doing, I'm not going to be shocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, wow, the state is doing horrific things. Yes. It's what they do.
That's kind of what Stefan Molyneux has said about the topic. He
right.
said, you know, rather than completely engulfing yourself in, let's say, the 9/11 conspiracies or Kennedy conspiracies or anything, rather than engulfing yourself in all the details of something like that, just realize it doesn't matter what you can imagine. If you can imagine it, they've probably tried
right.
it. you know, or would.
I feel that way right now on Facebook. The Israel-Palestine issue is a hot button.
Yeah.
And I have people, even people who portray themselves as anarchists on my Facebook page, or say that they are anarchists or are anarchists, you know, they'll still post things like, you know, Israel is evil or this is what Palestine is doing. But step back from it. Like, that is not what Israel is doing. That is not what Palestine is doing. It's what the state is doing.
Yeah.
The state is murdering children.
Yeah, this is all
government. And it doesn't matter
activity.
What flag the state is wearing at the time. It is the state. The state is the problem. Not Judaism, not Muslimism, not Islam.
Yeah.
Not Christianity, the state.
Yeah. I was talking to Dalton. I think it was when I was talking to Dalton the other day. And have you seen this latest meme? I guess Obama made a statement about Israel.
Yes, and he said they wouldn't tolerate, no country would tolerate bombs raining down on them every day or something like that.
Rockets. From some foreign country. And here he is, and the meme has a picture of a drone with a Hellfire rocket coming out from underneath it. Because here he is doing the exact same thing by his orders.
Yeah.
He's doing the exact same thing in, you know, a dozen countries, half a dozen countries, whatever it is.
Who knows?
With how many countries the U.S. is currently bombing. But he does that. And then when the Palestinians, and we're lumping them all together here, but it's really not. It's very small groups of people within Palestine that are shooting a very inefficient rockets randomly into another territory nearby.
And so the state's response is to go drop
bigger bombs
on them randomly.
Yeah.
Well,
blow up whole neighborhoods because from somewhere in that neighborhood a rocket came out of it.
Right.
But that's the way governments think.
Right.
You know, it costs them nothing to steal the money to build the bombs. It costs them nothing to drop the bombs and destroy property and kill people.
Right.
It costs them nothing.
Right.
So, you know, they do that. As a matter of fact, they gain power by it.
Right.
Because then all the, you know, the armchair quarterbacks can sit back and say, yeah, we're getting tough on them.
Right.
You know. Well, yeah, because they're not blowing up your house.
Right.
if it was your child that was blown to bits, you might have a slightly different idea about that.
Right. Yeah, the idea of wanting to take one side of that issue or the other and say, well, you know, the Palestinians are in the right, or, oh, well, the Israelis are in the right. No.
It's all caused by the state.
Is evil.
It's the myth of the state, believing in that myth. And we were talking a minute ago about how the market, it takes faith to understand that you don't have to have all the solutions. You just have to realize that the market could fix these things if the governments weren't there to interfere.
Right.
And so that's faith. But it's the opposite direction to say, well, we have to have these governments doing this or these governments doing that. That's faith, too.
Right.
So one way or the other, it's where is your faith lie? Does it lie in billions of people around the world solving a problem because it's better for them if they do?
Right.
Or is it better for a small committee of people to make a decision and then, using the aggression of government, force that upon everybody whether they want it or not?
It's very amusing to me because I've done quite a bit of research on the idea of archetype gods. And when you begin looking at societies that put their societal faith more towards the more trickster gods, they have a tendency to embrace the open market more. And when you look at more hero mountain gods, they have a tendency to embrace statism more. And it's a very interesting archetype that societies grasp onto, because the market is the ultimate trickster god. You know, it is random and sporadic and chaotic and
produces weird offspring sometimes.
Yeah, crazy offsprings that sometimes are destructive.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, brings about what needs to happen. You know, and whereas central planning and committees and a group of, you know, one or two gods sitting there deciding on fate. And mm-hmm. it's just, it's very interesting to me. I'm a Joseph Campbell reader. I like it.
That's, I was talking about the other day about some Nordic and Celtic myths mm-hmm. regarding things like magic helmets and magic right. swords and magic cauldrons, and all these things were items of power.
Right.
And when you have a situation where some hero takes up the item of power and then tries to do good with it,
right.
he may do some temporary good, but in the long run, it'll either destroy him or it'll cause a whole ripple effect of things that happen that you didn't expect to happen.
Right.
And that's really, I really believe that the, because, you know, the societies of Northern Europe got along for thousands of years without central governments.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until really up around 1000 AD that central governments began to, you know, pollute Northern Europe.
Yep.
And as they did so, in order to do so, they had to get rid of all the old traditional myths and the stories yep. and the legends, and the trickster god had to go, you know, and all these kind of things. They yep. had to get out. They had
the
to be gone.
The trickster god was their devil.
Yeah. As the new religions came in, that's what they ended up doing.
Yep.
And that was the only way they could sell the idea of a state to Northern Europe
mm-hmm.
was to crush their system of myths and everything.
Yep.
But all of those myths, I shouldn't say all, many of those myths had that the moral of the story built in, that if you attempt to use the helmet of power, or if you attempt to use the reins of government to try to regulate or control or dominate,
yep.
then maybe you'll produce some good things that you observe to begin with. But in the long run, it will either destroy you
mm-hmm.
or it will produce weird things that you don't expect,
yep.
damaging, horrible, you know, in the case of many of the myths, it produced a dragon.
Yeah.
And then, the dragon would destroy things and be a burden on society.
Yep.
But even in other myths, it would produce really negative consequences.
Yep. Well, and it's interesting because I haven't done a whole lot of research into like Native American mythos,
mm-hmm.
but those themes are repeated mm. in Native American in certain Native American mythos.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that, you know, if you have something that gives one person a lot of power, it is never good.
Right.
You know,
and it's interesting too, because prior to the European invasion of North America, most of North America was stateless.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because the people were barbarians or stupid or anything like
no,
that.
No, they had cities. They
yeah,
had...
they had free trade. They, you know, they had a variety of language, and they had, and it wasn't at just constant war like this government schools would like us to believe.
No.
Where there was
And there was property rights.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
was not this running through the forest, talking to magic trees, the sky cannot be owned and the earth cannot be. No, they owned things. They owned property. They had property rights.
Yeah.
That is not even a you're kind of stretching. It's a flat out lie that is perpetrated
yeah.
by the state.
Yeah, that was sold by the left in around 1900 as part of the lies that they sold, you know, to
yeah.
to indoctrinate everybody on the state.
Yeah.
But Central America was different, though. Central America, the state existed. You know, there were governments,
mm-hmm.
quite a few, both that riot.
Barely vicious.
Yeah, and war was a normal thing in Central America because they believed in the state.
Yeah.
And it was a constant struggle of one empire fighting the other. And, and of course, it was grain-based.
And they worshipped the sun god.
Yeah. And whereas the North American natives had a variety of all of those kind of things. You mm-hmm. know, they had, you know, coyotes. Mm-hmm. And
ravens and bears and all of that. And different archetypes. You know,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what label you put on or what story you put on. There are human archetypes
mm-hmm.
and people label them as gods and, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they are human emotions and they are human behaviors. Mm-hmm. And they are patterns of thought within humans. And because of that, they show up throughout the whole realm of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are what we are, you know.
Well, anyway, so it's good to have you back on the podcast.
Yay.
We have a new tagline. You know, I used to say, for more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com.
Uh-huh.
And you haven't heard it yet so because you've been gone. But our new tagline is badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission.
Oh.
Thanks a lot, folks, for listening. Goodbye.